Moncrief on News Talk.
Give me an action so I get confused if it's not an action.
All right, ready? Go.
Here at Priory Hill, we like making dreams come true. And if you're anything like me, this is the caravan for you. A 41 by 13 foot temple of tranquility. That's the one,
isn't it? That's amazing. I love that.
Young school.
Yeah, that's the Dyer's Caravan Park. It starts tomorrow on Sky Max and Now TV. James Dempsey is with us once again. Afternoon, James.
Afternoon.
Has this become a TV trope now where you have to make a series about some celebrity who's overextended themselves financially by investing in something?
Yeah, I mean, it worked for Clarkson and Amazon, yeah. Right? I mean, really well for them in the sense that that show is extremely popular. And like the thing about that, well, right, the thing about that is it creates this model immediately for other people to follow, right? Mm. Now, while the bones of this are Clarkson's farm, there are clear differences between this, right? So obviously this is about Danny Dyer, the actor, erstwhile EastEnders star, but who is going through a sort of career renaissance, I would say, ever since he went on to EastEnders, he's had this very, you know, bumped up career, and he won a BAFTA very recently for a supporting role in Mr. Big Stuff, which is a comedy on Sky. So he has already a comedic home on Sky. And I'm sure Claudia Webster, who's the producer who has worked on First Dates, and Amanda and Alan's Italian Job, a similar kind of thing, right? Probably approached him with this idea. Now, what's in it for him? Well, first of all, there's the industry itself of caravan parks in the UK is apparently worth £7 billion to the
wow,
UK economy.
Who knew? Yeah.
So obviously there's some
Brexit didn't take that from them,
right? There is some money to be made here.
Yeah.
But it's obviously the TV show that's the selling point. And I will say, while it doesn't, for me, didn't hit the same kind of comedic highs as Clarkson's Farm, for kind of obvious reasons that I'll get into for a moment, I did find it kind of charmingly funny, and that Danny Dyer, accompanied there by his daughter, also named Danny, one N with an I, probably best known for her stint on Love Island. I'm not quite sure what she's been doing since then, but
running a caravan park.
Sure, right. I'm not quite sure what she does actually in this show either, and I've seen the first few episodes, but whatever, right? The pair of them are this sort of comedic foil brought into the show. Now, Clarkson's Farm works because Jeremy Clarkson is a professional cynic, right? Like, yeah. I mean, his entire career is based on complaining.
Yeah.
Who am I to talk, right? But yeah. Like, basically his entire, you know, media persona is watch me undergo this thing. It go wrong. Did it deliberately go wrong? That's kind of the impression I got, but whatever, I'm going to joyfully complain and moan and then make it funny, right? Mm. And he is very good at that. He's extremely successful, you know, millions of pounds later and you know, whatever. Multiple seasons of Clarkson's Farm, he knows what he's doing. Danny Dyer, on the other hand, is kind of less of a fish out of water in this regard, right? Because Clarkson, I think, maybe did own a farm before, but we know him as this like petrol head motor journalist,
yeah.
Rather than a farmer with a green thumb going around and, you know, mucking out the stables. Danny Dyer, on the other hand, his persona is Cockney geezer, right?
And he probably went on holidays
exactly,
to caravan parks
exactly.
When he was younger. Yeah.
He talks about how his love for the Great British Caravan Park, what it meant for him in his youth and his family holidays, and how he wants to revitalize that industry. And he comes in less as a kind of like fish out of water, more as a bull in a china shop, right? So he joins the staff of Priory Hill. There's another caravan park called Nuts Farm Holiday Park. I'm actually a little bit confused if he's involved in both of them or if they are just on the same kind of plot of land. I'm not quite sure, like if they share a pub or whatever, right? But he arrives, my understanding is he's working for Priory Hill on Kent's Isle of Sheppey, which is a place I had never heard of, right? And he arrives with grand ambitions, but of course is also a celebrity in his own right and doing his own thing in his own right. So is not able to give 100% of a commitment to the role right at the beginning, in the sense that he doesn't show up on the opening day of the park for the season. And all the residents are arriving going, where's Danny? Where's Danny? Where's Danny? And Danny is nowhere to be seen. And then he sort of arrives and his first what I did like about it was, obviously, like Clarkson's Farm does have Jeremy working with people on the farm, but like not that many of them. And they have become characters in the show in their own right. But by and large, it's kind of him working with like on the farm, in the in the fields with the animals. And the animals, of course, don't talk back. The animals, quote unquote, here are the residents,
yeah.
Who are very much able to talk back and have their own opinion on how things should be run. and how he then sort of blends, you know, how he sort of falls in between both the residents and the current management that he has bought into as a partner in this firm, and how, like, you know, he runs this meeting very early on in the first episode where he is asking residents for opinions, and he's sort of going, yeah, yeah, that's a really good idea, to all this stuff that, like, the other partners in the firm are going, what are you talking about? Like, stop talking, stop talking. So I enjoyed it from the kind of, like, bull in a china shop approach to it, right? Could this run for multiple seasons? I don't quite know, because, I mean, I guess I'm just not that interested in caravans.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And this kind of holiday, right? But, like, put it this way, I'm two episodes in. I think it is a charming, funny little version of this show. And if you're looking for something to tide you over till the next Clarkson's Farm comes out, you know, I'd give it a go.
Yeah.
Do they say how much money he invested in this caravan?
They do not say how much he invested, but they do go to great lengths to show how many vacant lots there are in the caravan park, and how this is, you know, adding up to a loss already of £150,000 in revenue that they could be making and are not. So wow. I would imagine he has put money into this.
Yeah.
How much remains unclear, and indeed what he's going to clear at the end of his investment is also, you know, unclear.
I know it's a relative term, but how nice of a caravan park is it?
Yeah, like, I don't have much to go on, right? Like, as in, you know, I haven't been in a caravan park since, like, a childhood holiday in, you know, Wexford or Waterford in the 90s, right? So I don't really know. Put it this way, the caravan, like, do the locals look like...
Are there scraggy dogs wandering around the place? And like, gnawing human limbs?
What I was struck most by, right, and, like, who am I to talk in this in the sense of Irish productions as well, but, you know, a friend of mine works in TV here, and he says that, like, when these international productions come, they always want the most diverse audience that you can find to be seen. And it is a tricky thing in Ireland where where there is diversity, but in lesser numbers than other European countries. There's not a lot of diversity going on in this show, right?
Okay.
As for the holiday park itself, I mean, look, the pub looks like it looks like that kind of British pub where they're throwing darts and you know, swinging beers,
okay,
like chugging beers, etc. It looks fine, and it's on the coast, and it's pretty enough. It looks, it's fine. It looks, I'll put it this way. Would I be investing my money in it? Yeah, probably not.
Yeah, okay. But I imagine Danny Dyer's caravan park would do gangbusters business now after that big, long free ad. Right, our next show is 56 Days. You can stream all episodes now on Amazon Prime Video. Here's a clip.
Why don't we just stay strangers who share a fridge?
And share a safe.
I was looking at your fancy shirts. I didn't know that your closet was some mysterious no-fly zone. Maybe we should negotiate. You can tell me exactly where I'm allowed to be.
Okay, not there and not in my office. I already have a stalker. I don't need another one.
You think I'm a stalker? Well, God forbid I should want to get to know you. Why can't I?
There you go. That's 56 Days. As I said earlier, based on an Irish novel. And it didn't have many shrieky voices like that in the book. At least certainly that's not the way I heard it in my head. So it has been transferred to the US. Of course.
It's been a good few months of TV for Irish novels transferred over to the US, along with All Her Fault, which is also based on an Irish novel. My favorite thing about it is how they take all these Irish character names and Americanize them. So I assume in the book she's Kira Wise, but here she is Ciara Wise.
Yeah.
And her sister, I think, in the book is Siobhan, and here she, I thought it must be Sheila, but actually she's Shyla. Anyway, but so this is a book that was a huge publishing sensation here. It won at the Irish Book Awards. It was a very well received international thriller, and it used the plot device of the pandemic lockdown as a central tenet to it.
Mm.
The series is 8 episodes long, and because it has bulked out the story, adds an awful lot more plot to the novel that was not originally there, I would say, to the expense of the show. The novel, from my understanding, as someone who hasn't read it but knows people who have, is a tight, well-written, you know, kind of potboiler. And this went on and on and on, with then a lot of, you know, unexpected erotic scenes that...
aren't in the book. Yeah.
All right, that aren't in the book. You know, that really kind of, you know, we're going for a heated rivalry type, you know, oh my goodness, type affair. Yeah. Anyway, right. So the whole story revolves around police detectives arriving at this Boston apartment where a decomposing body has been found in the bathtub. And we then flash back 56 days to discover our two characters there, who we heard, Kira, later known as Ciara, played by Dove Cameron. She might not be a name that you know unless you are under the age of like 25, I would say, because she was a huge child star in the Disney The Descendants cinematic universe, which means nothing to me, but I do know it exists. I know her best as a supporting role in Schmigadoon, the Apple TV show. She's kind of a she's a musical star, a pop star in her own right. And here she is clearly going, I'm an adult star now, because you get a real eye full of her, is all I'm going to say. She is matched then by Avan Jogia. He's a Canadian actor. I know, you'd know him best if you saw The Stand, the Stephen King adaptation. Mm. He's been in a couple of other things as well. He plays Oliver. They both basically bump into each other in a supermarket, have a little meet-cute involving NASA, and then go on a date, and then 56 days later, there's a dead body decomposing in a bathtub. Who is it? We do not know. What is the relationship to them? That is what unfolds. Now, this is a thriller, and it is meant to be a potboiler. I found the kind of central conceit between the two of them like enough to be going on, but then they have really bulked up the role of the two detectives. They're played by Dorian Missick, not an actor I know. He's Carl Connolly. And then Carla Souza, who's a Mexican actress. She plays Lee Reardon. She's probably best known for her role in How to Get Away with Murder, but she is a very successful Mexican actress in her own right. She won an Emmy, an international Emmy last year for a Mexican film about diving, like the Olympic diving. And they both have this bulked up role where they have got their own private lives and their own issues and twists and turns with their own investigation of this already very twisty turny thing. So to me, I just found it was like a few twists too many.
Yes. Yeah.
Not to mention the frequent and highly charged erotic scenes that kind of added not that much to the story. Like, I get the whole point is they're supposed to be animalistically attracted to each other and like, yeah, man, I got that the first time, right? Yeah. Then the sort of, because the novel involves the pandemic as a legitimate reason why two people madly falling for each other decide to move in together under, you know, very short notice at the beginning of your relationship. Because this is set post-pandemic or pre-pandemic, who knows, but there's no pandemic involved. The conceit of why they end up moving in together also to me felt forced and a little silly.
Yeah, yeah.
All in, I just thought it was kind of grand. Like, not terrible by any means. You know, if you're looking for a erotic, pulpy thriller, look, absolutely, go for it. But like, it was just overblown, overdone, too stuffed with too many twists and turns for me, when if they had maybe just focused on the pandemic story, probably would have worked a little bit better.
Yeah, and the main character, Ciara, as they're calling her now, and Siobhan was the sister in the book, and she's now Shyla.
Yeah.
Now, in the book, Siobhan was in Cork. Is Shyla in Cork, or they changed her location as well?
She's somewhere else in, you know, Massachusetts. I'm not sure. Yeah. It's all shot in Montreal as well. So, like,
okay, just to confuse things. Right. Okay. Our final show is Thirst Trap: The Fame, The Fantasy, The Fallout. You can stream the entire series now on Paramount Plus. Here's a clip.
Fans in the chat were telling me you should put PayPal in your bio when they're robbing you TikTok, and then that's when I started. Went from 0 to 60,000 in like one night. Like, I woke up and it was at noon, $60,000. So when I called my dad, he's like, you should just quit your job. Like, I think you should like make videos.
Right. Okay. Now, this is a documentary series about William White. Who in the name of God's he?
Now, I would consider myself like a very online person, and I had never encountered him, but I don't have TikTok, and that is sort of where he found his fame.
Okay.
So he is a Canadian, I think he's about 25 now, and as a 20-year-old gardener, as, you know, 20-year-olds on TikTok do or did, he started doing little lip sync performances to classic tunes. And the one that, you know, the wink that launched his entire empire was halfway through the song Mandy, the Barry Manilow Mandy, also known as the Westlife covered Mandy.
Yeah.
He basically did his lip sync to Mandy and it went gangbusters with a certain cohort of like 50 plus aged women.
Right. Okay. Gotcha. Right.
And this documentary explores his nascent career as a sort of streamer of content to these women, and then the kind of somewhat bizarre fandom that this has generated. So he has become incredibly wealthy. I mean, we heard in the clip there him talking about putting onto his TikTok account his PayPal account, overnight he got $60,000. You know, one of the talking head interview women, I can't remember which one it is, I have their names here, Amanda Kate, Steph or Carrie, one of those, talks about how she has given him probably $100,000, as gifts.
Okay. Right? Now, not to do anything specifically, take your shirt off, any of that kind of stuff?
I mean, he does a little bit of that, right? But this is not like an OnlyFans type situation. Mm. Now, what is incredible about the show, right? So obviously it explores that kind of parasocial relationship that somebody might have. But I cannot express enough how much, if you watch this show, you will go, this guy.
Is he good looking?
I mean, he is, but he's not amazing, right? Like, as in, you know, have I thirst followed a person in my life here or there on some sort of social media? Yes, I have. Would I have given this guy a second look? Not a chance, right? Now then, it explores it across two parts, and we begin to see how this young person who then becomes this almost cult-like figure, right, for these women. They're known as the Gigi's, the grotto girls, right? So that is his fandom. They become increasingly hostile towards each other so that, you know, I won't go into details of the things that happen, but let's just say the subtitle here is The Fame, The Fantasy, The Fallout. And there are multiple fallouts that happen. What is also interesting is then you see, you know, William White's evolution, right? So you see him as this like fresh-faced 20-year-old, and you're going to say, James, at 25, he can no longer be not fresh-faced.
Yeah.
But he is no longer fresh-faced. Can see that there is this like physical change in him, and he goes on to talk about the own issues that he has faced. And it has then this kind of weird like relationship between them where, you know, they are funding this lifestyle that is clearly not doing him good. You know, like that would be my reading of it, that he does not seem happy. He does not seem healthy. He does not look as well as he previously did. All in, this is like, you know, not doing good to William White, nor is it doing particularly good for these women. But they're in this, you know, symbiotic, destructive, toxic relationship with each other. And neither of them, being a group of thousands of women or this one guy, can get out of it. I found it a fascinating, at times very tongue-in-cheek and like a bit too glossily made show, but like a really kind of rivetingly weird look at that parasocial relationship.
Yeah, and like I assume he went on to do lots of, was that all Barry Manilow type covers he did? Is there a whole body of work out there on TikTok?
I mean, his oeuvre is, you know, began as lip syncs. But then, I don't know enough about TikTok to be able to like comment to this. So if you go, my understanding is if you go live on TikTok, your followers can send you these gifts that are things like, you know, like lions and giraffes and ice creams. I don't know. But these, I believe, add up to financial rewards and incentives for you.
Right.
But of course, TikTok is taking its cut from it. So he has since left and sort of is now streaming live from, you know, all day, every day from his bedroom, like just playing the PlayStation or talking and ranting and all this kind of weird stuff. I'm a bit worried that they're going to come for me, now that I have like talked so candidly about the show. But I did like just thought it was such a really odd little piece of ephemera from the 2020s that, like, you know, this is how a lot of people, this is how a handful of people are making a huge amount of money. And yet how frank the women are talking about their financial support of this guy who, as I said, this guy.
Yeah. what does he do now?
Now, he's still doing the same thing.
He's still doing Barry Manilow, or he's in his bedroom buns and playing games?
Yeah.
And it's the same people paying him money for this.
Yeah, and I mean, they have met, they see where he's going, he goes out for dinner, and they'll pay his bill before he has even left, you know, at the end of the day, at the end of the meal.
Oh my God. And do they have families?
Yes.
Do they have anyone who might intercede on their behalf and say, pay for my dinner, why don't you?
Yes. That's why it is this really bizarre little two-part show.
Yeah. Disappointed to hear that about 56 Days. I loved the book, read it in 2 days, and was looking forward to watching. Well, it is the book, except with more plot and a hell of a lot more sex. Those three shows are The Dyer's Caravan Park, starting tomorrow on Sky Max and Now TV. 56 Days, you can stream all episodes now on Amazon Prime Video. And Thirst Trap, The Fame, The Fantasy, The Fallout, you can stream the entire series now on Paramount Plus. James Dempsey, thanks a million.
Thank you.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.